T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
But over the majority of his career, he wasn't considered the best of his position. There was Manning, there was Brady, so many more.
Put Phillip, Stafford, and McNabb. Put those in your order, Dibbers.
As far as Hall of Fame, I would go Phillip 1, I would go McNabb 2, Stafford 3. None of them, though, none of them Hall of Famers, in my opinion.
Understood. Whitey?
I would go Phillip Rivers, Hall of Famer. Stafford, maybe a Hall of Famer. I would say probably, but we still have to see, still some pizza left in that box. And then Donovan McNabb, 1, 2, 3. And I don't think he's going to get in. And years ago, going back 8 years ago, when things looked a little different, when you look at the big picture, I was staunchly defending his Hall of Fame candidacy. Now that we have more candidates and a broader perspective, I don't feel that I can make that case anymore.
Yeah, I'm in the same church as Dibbs. I got him ranked just like you just said, Dibbs. Think if you look at a Stafford who ain't won nothing.
Yeah.
McNabb at least won some playoff games and done something. At least Phillip won some playoff games and has done. Stafford's just been all numbers and all show, not been win big games. We can know McNabb. You saw him win some games. But as far as I'm with Dibbs, same church, same order.
If you look at the McNabb statistical comps, Whitey, of the people mm-hmm. with whom he resides, the neighborhood, you've got Boomer Esiason's just ahead of him on the all-time yards passing list. Boomer had a better career than McNabb did. Boomer not in the Hall of Fame. You've got Dave Craig, Joe Flacco, Kerry Collins. Kerry Collins with 40,000 yards passing. He's obviously not a Hall of Famer. Drew Bledsoe, Vinny Testaverde, these are guys who all accumulated better numbers than McNabb. None of them are in the Hall of Fame, and none of them deserve to be, in my opinion.
I'm with
you. Yeah, but I will say, to me, your argument just shifted a little bit there because you've been telling me, hey, you can't just look at the numbers. All right, I believe you said that. But then you just went with McNabb right to the numbers. That seems like an inconsistency to me. Now, I will point out.
Uh-oh. It's called a tectonic. It's a tectonic take, Whitey, when the plates shift, when the take shifts slightly. It's a tectonic take.
Yeah. Stafford, by the way, has been in 3 playoff games and is someone who's trying to make a Hall of Fame case for him. The less said about that, the better. He's taken the Lions to the playoffs 3 times.
Have won a game yet.
But he's taken to the postseason 3 times. Yes.
I think the thing that we're missing, and I think that this is what Dibbs and I keep alluding to, big games, and it's not necessarily about Super Bowls and winning playoff games. We get that because there's a guy, and we know it, Barry Sanders.
Barry Zito.
Barry Sanders, Hall of Famer, when was so electrifying that it didn't matter if he didn't win playoff games or go to Super Bowl because what he did, how he was an outlier. And that's what you need. Danny Fouts didn't go to a Super Bowl, but he was an outlier. You see what we're trying to get here, Whitey? I know you want to throw your guy in
really
there.
I wasn't really listening. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Wow.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, he was making great points about a player like Barry Sanders. Barry Sanders, he was so electrifying. He was the best player at his position for a long time. He stands out. Dan Fouts, same thing, even though he didn't win a Super Bowl. Yeah. So it's not only about winning. It's about how much better than your peers were you at the time you played?
Yeah, but that argument has a giant hole in it. I understand it carries some weight, but now people are going to get mad here. But if you look,
Tony Gonzalez, we can go on and on and on. There's a lot of guys that didn't necessarily have great teams, LaDainian Tomlinson, but because the way they did it, most of those guys have been rewarded.
Okay. Maybe you didn't make this point, Lo. And again, I'm not sure because I had something going on here at home. But maybe you didn't make the point. I know Dibs has made this point, and a lot of people make this point. Like I say, it's valid, but only to a point, which is, well, if a guy was never the best at his position, can he be a Hall of Famer? You could make the case, and I know he won an MVP, but you could make the case that Kobe was never actually the best in the NBA. And I know Kobe, people are going to get upset. He was the MVP. How can you say that? But Kobe Bryant clearly is, there's no question, one of the greatest players ever. But he was always in a league with great players. My point is not in any way, shape, or form to denigrate Kobe and his legacy. I'm just saying that the argument that, well, he was never the best at his position, I think that quite often rings hollow.
I don't think you have to be the absolute best, but you have to be among the best. And that's the point I was making, because there's only one player who's going to be the absolute best. But how many times did Kobe Bryant lead the league in scoring? 6, 7? So even though he didn't necessarily win the MVP, and by the way, that is voted on by you and your other hateful brothers and sisters in the media. They're the ones who decide that. Kobe Bryant actually led the league in scoring on two different occasions, averaging 35 a game and 31 a game, or 32 a game, rather, respectively. So in those seasons, he probably was the best player, even if he didn't bring home your beloved media award.
All right, now you're going back to the numbers again. Fair enough. Barry Zito hopefully is coming up, and we do have the Bay Bridge series coming up, the Giants and the A's. I know that with the win yesterday, Lo wins the bet, but the Giants are playoff bound. It's playoff time.
Playoff
for the
time.
Giants. And forget the 8 seed. They might be the 7 seed. We talked about it earlier. How significant is it that the Giants this year, this crazy year, they could be a playoff team? I think it's fun. I just don't know that it amounts to much. Good for your young players to play in meaningful games, but I don't know that it means that your rebuild is any further along, in my opinion.
I don't think it's necessarily your rebuild is further along, but I do believe, like Dibs was saying earlier, that he and I have been in the same church on this. At least you're starting to get pieces that you know that could be that stopgap, you know, until guys start to come in and mature. You look at Joey Bart coming up. Now, yeah, he's a long-term piece. But guys like Yaz, 30, and other guys, you look at them, they can still be a part of the fabric right now in that bridge that brings, you know, the crossover till you get the other players. I think that it does serve the Giants well to see what they had now and to see how many of these guys that people came out of nowhere and now they're playing and they're playing significant and holding a big-time role for this Giants team.
You've got guys. I mean, you've got guys who you know you're going to be able to keep, and you know you're going to have to suffer through one more year of contract difficulty. Posey at 22 next year, Cueto 22, Longoria 19, Crawford 15, Belt 17. That right there is darn near $100 million on five guys who you probably aren't thrilled you're going to have around for the next year. But then, Lo, you look at other names like Wilmer Flores on the books for $3 million. Donnie Barrels, is entering an arbitration situation. You've got Yastrzemski, who's not making a ton of money. Wandy Peralta's facing arbitration at $800K. You have enough affordable pieces. They may not be the youngest players, but you've got affordable pieces and guys who can help you next year until more resources come in 22.
Question.
I'm with you.
Especially for you, Dib. What is the opposite of the gold glove? What would I know there isn't one, but what would you say if I were to ask you, what's the absolute opposite of a gold glove?
The bronze spittoon, probably.
Bronze spittoon. Okay. On NBC Sports Bay Area, when they show the Giants lineup before a game, when they show like Brandon Crawford, gold glove winner. When they show Longoria, gold glove winner, they need to put the bronze spittoon next to your boy, Donovan Solano, because he's having a fine year with a stick. He is brutal defensively.
Well, defense doesn't matter anymore, Whitey. Defense no longer matters in Major League Baseball. You know, the old days of, you know, hit me 100 grounders and I'll run some gassers and we'll be ready for the morning. That's not baseball anymore. Now it's about, where's my pocket protector? Where's my calculator? Gotcha. Let me go do my video. It's about launch angle, bat speed. It's about the three true outcomes. Defense is just something you're forced to do nowadays.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of, well, it's nice. It's a luxury. Oh, you want, man, we'd rather have a good defensive team, but
I guess
that's kind of a money ball principle. What's coming up on The Game is brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. Hopefully Barry Zito is going to be joining us, so save some of that flattery. Dibs. Also, Receiver Roulette is coming up. Chilton Auto Body is open to serve the Bay Area with contact-free auto body repair options, along with free pickup and delivery. Chilton Auto Body now offers virtual estimates and curbside contact-free service from the comfort of your vehicle. Book an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com. You're listening to Whitey and for Coz, Low and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
It was numbers on the scoreboard. Riding home in Dad's Ford with a nice cold.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
That's nice. Stanley Cup, that's a nice piece of hardware. Lombardi Trophy,
yeah.
None of those compared to the Bay Bridge Trophy. Up for grabs this weekend. Whitey, Low, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. That song, by the way, Ballpark Kids, dropping today. The newest from Barry Zito, who should be joining us momentarily. Hold on, Dibs, with the flattery, because he's not actually with us yet. So save it, save it, save it. But, yeah, the Giants need to sweep, is my understanding, to hang on to that coveted, significant Bay Bridge trophy this weekend, Dibs.
I'm feeling like you're trolling me right now, Whitey, because my comments, my remarks about said trophy are on the record. And I love Ahmed Fareed, friend of the program, and Brody Brazil and I go back some 30 years, but that trophy that you so anointed as better than the Lombardi, more coveted than the World Series, even the Lord Stanley's Cup itself, for you to put this abomination in the same league as those trophies is an embarrassment, and it's a permanent stain on your once great career.
How far back do you go with our next guest?
I go pretty far back, not back, but I'll tell you this about Barry Zito. The Bay Bridge Trophy should be a likeness of Barry Zito in his 75. Half A's, half Giants. He was an A. He was a Giant. He's an A. And now he joins us on the best morning program in the Bay Area. What's up, Barry? How you been, kid?
I'm good. How are you guys? Sorry I was late to the show here. I lost track of time.
No problem.
Running around doing a couple errands today.
Not a problem. Barry Zito joining us on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line. Barry, congratulations on the new song, Ballpark Kids. We played it, drops today. You got to be thrilled about that. How does composing a song compare to composing or authoring a shutout?
Oh, a shutout. Oh, geez. You know, I think both are similar in that you can't really take responsibility for the final product. I think you just got to get kind of lost in the process. And when that happens, you know, usually at least with songwriting, you know, you get something that if anything, you like it, and you know, hopefully other people like it too.
What's more difficult from a fine motor standpoint, playing the instruments you do, mandolin, banjo, guitar, or being able to snap off that 12-6 curve like you were able to?
You know, I would say they're both very similar in that you just have to trust your talent, your skill. But if you're not prepared, then both can be a disaster in front of a live audience or, you know, in front of a live hitter. So I think self-trust is really the name of the game there.
Barry, when was it? Well, you were a young lad and you said, you know what, this singing or this music thing is something that's just, what made you grow? What made it grow on you? What was that defining moment? Was it a group that you said, hey, I got a good ear for this?
Yeah, I think, you know, with the musical ear, you're kind of a lot of times born into it. You know, I mean, I had a musical family, and so I could just hear, you know, I could just hear things musically, that I don't know if I can actually take credit for that. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I just think it's something that I heard music in my house my whole life. My parents both had great ears, and my mom had perfect pitch, which basically means, you know, she could hear a sound like somebody's exhaust pipe driving down the street, and she'd be like, oh, that's a B flat. I don't have that, but I do feel like I got a lot of the inheritance of music. So, you know, I kind of was hoping to go into music full time, I would say, even while I was playing ball, but knew that that was going to be at a later phase in my life. And so I'm finally here, and I'm just having a blast.
The great Barry Zito, nice enough to join us. Three-time All-Star, as you know, Cy Young Award winner, two-time world champ, author of Curveball, How I Discovered True Fulfillment After Chasing Fortune and Fame, and his brand-new song, Ballpark Kids, dropping today. Barry, pitching your last game 5 years ago this month against Tim Hudson and the Giants, I know that for fans, as a fan, a very meaningful, very special, I'll never forget it. What did that day mean to you, Barry?
Oh, that day against Hudson, I mean, it was quite surreal. I mean, to be honest, I didn't think I was getting called up to the A's. I was, you know, I was kind of like retired, so to speak, for 9 days, and then I got this phone call from Billy Beane, and so it was a little strange to think I would never play baseball again, and then all of a sudden to be back in the big leagues like a week later. And then, you know, to go back to Oakland wearing the, you know, the A's uniform, being on the mound where I first made my debut, and then to pitch against a longtime friend, Hudson, who ironically was wearing a Giants uniform. I mean, there were just so many things about that day that were, you know, completely unscripted. So it was a little surreal, and I think I probably got a little too excited about everything and, you know, didn't pitch great. And I know Huddy didn't pitch great. And I think both of us just had to try to enjoy the actual experience, which it's hard to perform well and enjoy the experience, unfortunately, with pro sports. So, you know, so I picked one at least.
Do you find that same thing in your music, that it's tough to enjoy it and perform well? Or do you, when you're out there and you're able to lose yourself in the music, and you're obviously not thinking about every word or every chord or every note, but can you really enjoy it, or are you just tense and tight trying to make sure that it's perfect every time out?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I would say there's a parallel there. I mean, when you are trying to be perfect and make sure that things go well, usually it won't, whether in sports or in music. But I think for performing on stage and certainly with just an acoustic guitar and your voice, which is about as exposed as you can be, authenticity is everything. And so, you know, my goal was just be totally real. If I screw up, I screw up, but I'm just going to really open my heart to the crowd right now and be vulnerable. And, you know, when I'm in that headspace, you know, I have a great time because I'm just telling the story from the heart, and it usually comes across to the audience, you know, and people can tell when you're kind of faking it on stage. You know, it's pretty cool how the music fans, they have a real sense of what's real and what's not. And I think that you just have to be always, you know, as real as you can be.
Man, Barry, it'd be awesome one day to get you on and let you, you know, give us a couple chords and hit a couple liners and let us feel it, baby. Let us feel it, my man. But hey, B knows what's up. He knows how to handle this. When you're looking at, you know, the Giants and you're seeing these two teams, the A's and the Giants, which one has been a huge surprise to you and why?
Gosh, you know, I mean, obviously they're both having strong years. I think the Giants, you know, with so much transition, you know, coming out of the Bochy era, obviously, you know, there's been some personnel changes going on. You know, I think that is a surprise. You know, they've dealt with a lot, and certainly in the COVID era and, you know, Posey, you know, and all these things stacked against them, really. And they're just coming out and proving people wrong. And it's been fun to watch. And, you know, the A's somehow always just magically figure out how to put a team out there, man. It's pretty incredible.
Barry, I don't, in no way, shape, or form do I mean to put you on the spot. I'm sure you have a unique perspective on this, comparing fans. Do the two franchises, fans of the A's, fans of the Giants, you're very familiar with both. How would you compare them?
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, for me, I mean, my experience was interesting because I was part of the like early 2000s A's, right? So the A's fans were basically like that same attitude as the Raider fans, right? It was just kind of, you know, we're going there. Like we really, you know, we're diehards. We're at the Coliseum. You know, come rain, come shine, good team, bad team, it doesn't matter. And, you know, certainly in the playoffs, that was just an intimidating place to come and play. And, you know, Mount Davis was, I mean, shoot, if you could get Mount Davis half full back then, I mean, that was an accomplishment. So, and that was before the tarps were out in the upper deck. So, I mean, I have great memories of those fans just being so dedicated. And, you know, Dollar Beer Wednesdays, I mean, we would always watch the fights in the upper deck. I mean, we were as entertained as the fans were back then. But, you know, and then the Giants fans went through a bit of a kind of a transformation, I think, at least from a visiting player coming over to San Francisco. In the early 2000s, the fan base did not seem, I would say, as intimidating. I think they were definitely educated about baseball. I don't think that's changed. But in 2010, you know, with the whole run and the World Series, I mean, something happened in San Francisco. And after that, visiting players would talk, you know, because I would hear guys on other teams, and nobody wanted to come play in San Francisco. I mean, it was one of the most intimidating places to come play as a visiting player. And that was cool to be a part of that and to see that change.
No question, Barry. That must have been. You know what? Take you down memory lane, and one of my memories, fondest memories, is playing in Tennessee, 17 seconds left. We're losing. We need a miracle. They kick the ball. The big fella, Low Neal, grab it, pitch it back to Wycheck, hit to Dyson, crank up the band. We beat
Buffalo.
The Bills to win the game. Unbelievable. What is one of your fondest moments that you could be a part of, or just a game that you experienced that you just like, wow, I was a part of that?
For me, let's see. Gosh, that's a lot of years in one question. I mean, for me, just everything that went into the whole San Francisco, kind of lots of lows and a few highs. Yeah. You know, Sergio Romo throwing the last pitch to strike out Miguel Cabrera to end the 2012 World Series. That was a moment that will be forever locked into my mind. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And just like waiting in the dugout, you know, with felt like a million horsepower engine ready to go full speed, and all of us were ready to charge. And you know, and he struck out Cabrera. And that was it. And we charged. And I mean, that was just the ultimate kind of redemption for me, just as a player, and to be able to help the team do something that I was paid a lot of money to come do and that I certainly didn't do for many years was incredible for me.
How tough was that from the time you signed? Because I was on the other side, and all people could talk about was 7 years and $126 million, and that was the drumbeat as the team was trying to go from the Barry Bonds era to the Barry Zito era. And you mentioned it, things didn't work out as planned in the beginning, but once you got that World Series ring, did you have that feeling finally of, I've arrived, and what I came here to do, I've been able to do?
Yeah, I mean, listen, for me, I mean, being kind of a, you know, perfectionist and probably too much, you know, it was a letdown. My career was a letdown. I mean, just to be totally honest, what I was prepared to do in the game and really on pace to do after my first seven seasons in Oakland and what I had expected of myself to do in San Francisco, you know, I wanted to win 300 games, pitch 20 years and do all these things. And I was on pace to do, you know, a lot of those things. And then, you know, I just didn't have the foundation that was prepared to hold the pressure and to be sturdy under, you know, under the kind of, the pressure of pro sports and money and all that. You know, I thought I did, and I didn't have any kind of foundation really. And so I had to go through those tough times to really get a foundation, which I have now, thankfully. And, you know, I found God. I found something more important than baseball that really put everything in perspective. But for me, I'd say the biggest vindicating moment was when Brian Sabian came out, I think in my last week as a Giant, 2013, before the season ended, and said if we had to do it again, we would do it. I would do it. I would sign Zito to that contract if I had to do it all over right now. And I think it had to do with mentoring young players and, you know, all these things. But when I read that in the paper, you know, I remember the moment. I was actually in the bathroom stall, like in the locker room, and I'm just reading the paper, you know. And I read that, and I think I just totally teared up at that moment and couldn't believe, you know, after those seven turbulent years that somebody would, you know, the guy that signed me would do it again. That was like the ultimate for me.
Barry, that says a lot about just your character, who you was as a man. And when you're going through those dark times and like the country is now, what would you say, you know, to those? And you said you chose to find God, which is, I'm in the same church and pew as you. But what would you say to those that are going through and struggling athletes? You see a guy like Jimmy G, different people struggle. How do you find that balance or find that comfort when so much is required of you?
Man, I mean, I would just sum it up as an identity crisis. I feel like most of us in the world, except for those few that have got it all figured out, and I'm certainly not one of them, but, you know, the world is very enticing, human approval and adoration. And, you know, pro sports or not, even if you're just at your job and you want your coworkers to love you, you know, these kind of things are so enticing to our egos that we start to identify too much with what everyone thinks. And am I enough? Am I good enough? Am I loved? Am I loved for who I am instead of what I do? I mean, those are the issues I think that drive us all a little insane. So, you know, for me, it's what identifies, you know, what defines me, right, as a human being. And if that thing is something that is going to be changing from day to day, such as a pitching performance like it was for me, that is a recipe for disaster. And I think a lot of pro players can agree.
Barry Zito with us again, the author of, as you know by now, Curveball, How I Discovered True Fulfillment After Chasing Fortune and Fame. His new song, Ballpark Kids, dropping today. I want to apologize because we're talking about things much more important than baseball, obviously. But I have another baseball question for you, Barry. You mentioned 300 games, winning 300 games. And there was a time when you'd look at lists of guys most likely next to win 300, and you'd be on there. And now no one's going to win 300 games because the win has been de-emphasized. Okay, and I understand that. What was it like for you, I mean, to be the winning pitcher? What did that mean to you? And do you think maybe we're losing something there the way the win for the starting pitcher is being devalued?
Yeah, it's crazy you say that. I'm not too aware of that change. I mean, I'm a little out of touch with the game, you know, and there are a lot of stats I see now that I have no idea what they are. Like, I don't even know what these things, like barrel percentage and things. But, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's funny because my mother always had this theory, and she actually, I was back in the day, I was friends with Peter Gammons, and I told Peter, my mom's idea was forget the win, let's start judging pitchers by quality starts. And now I have no idea if those apply as much today, but, you know, imagine if a pitcher's, let's say a guy gets 30 starts a year, you know, and he goes to pitch, and the first stat you see is, let's say he's got 18 starts on the year. You know, you would see something like 14/18. It's like, wow, this guy's having a huge year. He's got 14 quality starts at 18. I mean, that's possibly Cy Young pace right there, you know. And so I think pitchers have a little more handle on whether they can throw up a quality start versus whether they can throw up a win. But, I mean, ultimately the game is a traditional game, and the win has always been the main stat, the first stat. But I always thought it's ironic how that's usually the one that they have the least control over.
You mentioned the analytics and how there's all these numbers that, whether it's BABIP or exit velo, or I'm kind of with you, Barry. Sometimes it's just too much numbers, too many analytics. Do you think that this is ultimately harming the game, the traditional game, or is it just more of a sign that this is what younger people and future fans are into?
Yeah, I mean, I just think attention spans are you know, waning, and, you know, we need to be quick to be entertained, and I don't think it's a bad thing. You know, I think that technology and analytics are going to make themselves into every aspect of our lives. I just hope it doesn't ever, you know, become more important than just sitting back and enjoying a baseball game. And, you know, if you're worried about all these kind of things that are, I guess, left brain oriented, you know, your intellect's going crazy, but, you know, sometimes you just want to sit back and have a hot dog and, you know, enjoy a ball game with your kids or, you know, with your parents. And I think that's more important.
Barry, one more if we could. I know you got to go here, but I may never get a chance to ask you this again. If you compare guitar chords to pitches, I got the fastball is the A power chord. I got a curveball, maybe E flat major 7 or F minor 7. And a curveball is like a suspended chord. Does that register at all? Make any sense to you?
That's interesting.
You can tell him no, Barry. Say, you don't got to make
the fastball is definitely the power chord. rock and roll, baby. And let's see, a curveball is a little more of kind of a unique, maybe an artistic thing. So I would say like something with a 7 in it, like a major or minor 7. Let's see, the changeup would probably be probably just a minor chord, nothing too fancy. And then maybe like a knuckleball would probably be like, you know, an augmented or a diminished chord, something a little more funky.
Nice.
A little more spicy.
Nice. Congratulations, Barry, on Ballpark Kids. We appreciate your time very much. Thanks for joining us, sir. We'll talk to you again soon.
I like that.
I appreciate it.
You're the best, Barry.
Barry Zito. He is brought to you on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line. Visit BayAreaChevroletDealers.com to find a dealer in your area. Well,
I
worth waiting
it.
For, Dibs. Yeah.
My God. My God. Unbelievable, Dibs. I see why. The things that you were saying, I said, okay, Dibs is on that little soapbox, gonna go ahead and pub a guy up, better person.
Yeah.
I'm like, but that's the first time having a conversation with him and meeting him over the airways with the billions. Dibs, he very, very impressive.
Yeah, grounded, astute. And think about his career trajectory. He comes out of USC with this crazy curveball, and he immediately just takes off with the A's. They got these three aces, Hudson, Mulder, and Zito, and they're the future. And, well, you just can't seem to get over the hump with the Yankees, Sly, Jeremy, Slide, and all that. And he eventually signs a massive deal with the Giants, Lo. And I remember I was on the air at the time, 7 years, $126 million. It was $18 million a year.
That's some cake,
and,
boy.
Yeah, back then that was huge cake. And the Giants were trying to turn the page from the Barry Bonds steroid stain into, hey, Barry Zito, he's a good guy. He's coming over from Oakland. Boy, can he deal. And it just didn't really work out. He struggled. They got lit up. And by the time the team got good, it was all about Lincecum and it was all about Kane. Barry Zito was an afterthought until 2012, where he had that huge start that helped propel them to the World Series. And the fact that he mentioned that, Whitey, he was on the can reading the newspaper when he sees the comments from Brian Sabian saying basically he would do it again and he teared up. That was a pretty cool story that Barry told about that.
Right, yeah, right.
Great thing about talking to Barry Zito here, you can understand if he's a perfectionist, as he said, and that's one of the reasons that he's as accomplished as he is, because he's a perfectionist. But it made me a little sad for him to say, oh, you know, my career really was a disappointment. Because to me, you look at what he did in Oakland, and he won a Cy Young, and he was part of a great team that helped, you know, change baseball, really, in the way we still look at baseball today. He goes to San Francisco, and things weren't going well. But what do we remember about him in San Francisco, you know, the 2012 World Series and 2012 playoffs. So to me, that was he earned that money because he helped the Giants win a couple World Series. So I don't look at Barry Zito's career as a disappointment at all. Of course, it doesn't matter what I think, but it kind of made me sad to hear him talk that way.
Yeah, but you look at what he did in Oakland, and he's right. He had 102 wins in 8 years. He was 102-63, solid numbers, and he's just 28 years of age. So you're sitting on 102 wins, and you're 28, and you're thinking, you know, especially the way he pitched, he didn't have a lot of injuries. He wasn't a big, high-velocity guy putting a lot of strain on the shoulder and the elbow. And you thought, okay, if I've got 102 wins in 8 years, if I play 12 years more at this pace, he might have a chance for 300. He ends up with 165 wins. But, you know, you go to the Giants and it's 11-13, 10-17, 10-13, 9-14. This was not what the Giants paid $126 million for, and the pressure kind of got to him.
And for this guy to say how hard it was on him, and to just to be humble and say, you know what, I was disappointing in my career. You know, of course he had some great years like you just talked about, Whitey, but you know, he's talking about his whole career, and it's tough when you look at it and you know that you're getting paid that type of money, you're a grown man playing a kid's game, getting a king's ransom, and then you know that you're not performing at the level that you're accustomed to. And what people are accustomed to, an organization are accustomed to, it hurts. But it goes to show you how they felt about the man. When you hear a comment like that in a paper, and says, oh, we signed a bus, or whatever it may be, he tears up. Why? Because they knew where his heart was. They knew the effort, the commitment, Dibs, to being of excellence, to continue to strive, go out there every day, do the small things, go try to get help to fix the problem. And it just wasn't happening.
Yeah, so we got the Bay Bridge Series tonight, playing for that darn trophy, whatever it's called. The Giants need to sweep to win that thing, and our thanks to Barry Zito for joining us. You know, when the Giants signed him, Dibs, correct me if I'm wrong here, you were right there at their flagship. Part of the reason they brought in Barry Zito was because they were trying to get out from under. There was something of a cloud of Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds is a great player, and he helped them a lot. But, you know, towards the end, it became a bit of a cloud, and they wanted a fresh new approach. They brought in Barry Zito. It didn't quite work out. It was really not until Buster and in Mad Bum, but especially when Buster came in, that they started to move the franchise in the direction in which they wanted to move it.
Yeah, it was tough in the beginning because, you know, the Giants in 2007, you sign Barry Zito and you win 71 games. You go 71 and 91. And next time we have Rich Aurelia on, we got to remember to ask him about that year and those early years where they were transitioning from Bonds into the Zito era. And, you know, you had Lincecum come up as a 23-year-old that year. Matt Cain pitched as a 22-year-old. Jonathan Sanchez was 24. So it's a little bit reminiscent of where the Giants are hoping to be now with this young core of guys. Because remember, Cain and Lincecum were farm products, and they came up as young players. And you look at this year's team, and now you've got Joey Bart, who's coming up. And I know he's a little bit older than 22, but the same sort of hope for the future, hope springs eternal for this Giants organization.
Yeah, well said, Daniel, well said. And that's why I want to look at this giant organization and see what, you know, Farhan's been able to do. And, you know, talking about Dave Kapler, seeing how he's going to see if he could ride the ship. You're in a situation now. How do you turn the page? And I think this series, this Bay Bridge series that you keep alluding to, Whitey, this is that chance. This is that opportunity for the Giants. The Giants got motorboated. They got beat. It was 13, whatever it was, and just got kicked around. Had a game they should have won, and they felt that they should end up losing that game. And it was a sign of things to come. So how do you bounce back? Especially now, you're a playoff team. You're a team that people respect. You can't get motorboated here. Here's a game you got to find a way to be. So this series, I'm really looking forward to. And believe it or not, I'm not trying to go out. You can call this a hot take or whatever you guys want to do, because I know you guys like to come at the big grilled cheese at times. I got the Giants winning this series. I don't have them sweeping, but I do have them winning this series, Dips, because of the way the last outing. And this is not Homer Radio. This is just about to a man, you got slapped in the face, Dibs. You have to go out and right this ship. Some way you got to show that you can beat a quality team.
Yeah, it's just you play the teams on your schedule. I don't know if you can really worry too much about it. You know, you're not going to win every game, so you go out there and you compete, and chips fall where they may, and you hope when push comes to shove, you're ready to go in the postseason.
Yeah. By the way, keep it locked on 95.7 The Game today all day for the best 49ers coverage, and go to 95.7thegame.com or any of our social media accounts. Check out the video with Shasky and Damon. Showing you how to elevate your tailgate, brought to you by Gold Bar Whiskey, the official whiskey of the San Francisco 49ers, and Goat Fuel. Clean energy, packed for performance. Now, I know you guys have some things you have to take care of on Friday, so I want to make sure you have the opportunity. Do you guys have some picks you need to get to, Dibs? If not, fine, we move on. But I just didn't want to run roughshod right through all of that.
I think we've decided to go pick free in 2020. Free? I was off last week. I was unable to make it to the phone. So I think maybe a little receiver roulette, and we'll just knock it around and depart as friends.
Yeah. I'm with you, Dibs. I'm with you on that.
I mean, after I motorboated the former NFL player three seasons, it's kind of light work, Whitey.
Okay.
You know, once you dust up the challenger, you know, you take him out twice, and then the third bout, I was forced into the third bout, and yeah, he got me. Sometimes you get the bear, and sometimes the bear get you.
Okay, then let's do it. If that's the case, let's do it. Since you want to do that, let's just pick. We'll just pick them. We'll have fun.
No, it's cool. I'm going to sit on my 2-1 lead. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to know that for the rest of my life, I was better at picking games than you were, with 2 seasons victory and a 1-season defeat. I'm going to go ahead, like in roller derby, Whitey, where you rack up a couple points and you call off the jam. I'm going to call off the jam.
Take your word for it.
Oh, jam.
I apologize.
Teddy Dibs jam for me.
Jam.
It was in my notes. I apologize for even bringing it up. So, Dibs, you want to take over here with a little receiver roulette for us?
Yeah. Here's how we do it. Steven, spin that wheel. It is the 49ers receiver roulette, Whitey. The bit came about because the 49ers don't have a very good, viable wide receiver. This all spawned before they got E-Man last year, Emmanuel Sanders, because we were flummoxed. We were baffled. Baffled? You're baffled? Yes, we were baffled as to who the best receiver would be week in and week out. So we've got a little contest where we pick receivers. Whoever has the best numbers wins. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Receiver Roulette. Lo Neal, you'll be leading us off. You can pick any of the 49ers wide receivers. Who will have the most catches Sunday at the Meadowlands?
Steven, is my man born up, or is he, you know, all these guys going down like a hot potato? Is Borny up? If Borny's the guy, I'm going with Borny. Borny is going to be my guy. I like what this guy does. I like his twisting and his turning. Made some very, very big plays last year. He is going to be the guy.
That's Borny. Borning for you. Yeah.
I love you. You love me.
You love me.
You're my receiver.
We're a happy family.
Yes.
With a great big hug and a kiss from you. Won't you say you Borning too?
Yes, 84. Lowe's going with Borning, borrowing from Coase, who called Mark Spears Spearsy earlier in the week. So Lowe's real good friends with Borning, but he doesn't know if he's up or not. So.
Tim and Jim.
Lowe's going with Borning.
What?
Yeah. Yes, Whitey. Yes, please.
Is it my turn, first of all?
Well, I was about to announce that you were on the clock, but apparently you felt the need to ask a question about the thing I was about to say.
You blew it!
Am I picking for Cozumel, or am I picking for me?
No, you got to put your name on it. Coase is on his own.
Yes.
Coase gets Whitey's crumbs. Normally he gets Brody's crumbs when he does A's pre and post. Hashtag Brody's crumbs. Coase is getting Whitey crumbs on Monday. So Whitey, with a second pick in the receiver roulette draft, the Whitey Gleason's select.
What do you got, Whitey?
Brandon Ayuk.
Is that a little Werewolves of London right there? Warren Zevon?
Ayuk. Yeah, I'm going Brandon Ayuk.
You sound like you're from London.
Yeah.
That's very good. Very good. So we've got Kendrick Bourne to Lowe. Whitey is going with Ayuk. It's a pretty strong pick. Which,
who are you going with, Curly? Who you got?
Curly doesn't get a pick, okay? Curly's going with...
He keeps showing up on our Zoom. I mean...
Because he's excited. He's loving the content right now. He crafted a great show today. So I've got... I could take Trent Taylor. I could take Dante Pettis. But I'm going to borrow from the good people at the electric company in Sesame Street and simply take Sinamanu. Do-do-do-do-do.
Sinamanu.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Sinamanu.
I think Sinamanu will play Sinamanu.
Sinamanu.
Hey, Whitey. Hey, Whitey.
You know what I would have did?
What?
I would have took Brandon, but only reason I did, because he's injured. He's been hurt.
Yeah.
He's coming back.
Right.
He was a full participant in practice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
He's limited. So he'll probably be back. Cam Inman said
he's
probably
back.
Playing.
Yeah, I know he's going to play, but you're going to put a racehorse after you get him to play? You're going to say, I'm going to take him to Kentucky Derby? You might still let him run. I'm going to limit the guy.
Right.
I'm going to limit him.
Yeah.
Limit his targets. They're going to let him play. He's going to do what he do. But that's why I went with...
Okay.
Borning!
One bonus point
too,
here.
Yeah.
He took him first. Which position group gets the most catches? Receivers, backs, or tight ends? Lowe, we start with you.
RBs. You know what? That's a great place. We got the beef. RBs. That's right. RBs are going to...
We have the meat.
Yes.
Where's the beef was Wendy's. We have the meat is Arby's.
We
Whitey,
have
which
the
way
meat.
Would you go? Which personnel grouping? RB, EE, or WR?
I'm not optimistic that Kittle is going to be healthy enough to contribute much. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think he will. So I'm going to go with the wide receiver group next.
Wow, strong take. I'm also with Lowe. I'm going to go with the RBs. The RBs, we have the meat.
He came around to me. Yes.
He did.
No.
You could. It was a prediction segment. That wasn't the draft portion. We drafted, then we predicted. Yeah. Well, you thought wrong. Apparently,
I love you, Dibbins, because you do trust your boy. Because I got you to swing that quick changeover in a matter of an hour. After I laid it out, you're like, you know what?
You made some cogent points, and you know. Unlike some on this program, just simply bury their nose in the text line, I actually listen to my co-hosts and my friends. It's
Damn
called
it,
conversation.
Jim.
It's called Coase-versation, Coase.
Right.
Say it. Say, I'm sorry, sir.
Yeah. Coase is back on Monday, by the way. Coase is back on Monday from Tennessee. So it's going to be a big
Tennessee.
Monday. So you guys presumably will be all over a big 49er victory. Although Lowe says if they don't win this one... And
give me your score, Whitey. Give me your score. Give me your Whitey score. Give me what's the line too? Give me the line and the score. Come on, let's go fast, rapid fire.
Well, let's see. The 49ers will cover. I think they're giving 7, so they will cover and they will win 27-17.
I'm going to go with 27-12. I just can't see the Jets putting up too much. Sammy D and the boys not able to get in the end zone. Four field goals is all they muster. It's the Niners 27. It's gangrene 12.
I got 30-13. I got Niners motorboating. Motorboating 30. Nice.
Lo'Neal.
Motorboat? You play the motorboat?
Thank you so much.
Oh, you sailor, you.
Steven, I'll appreciate everything. Thanks for having me in. Have a great weekend. Have lots of fun next week with Coz. And thank you for being the smartest listeners in radio. Coming up, Bonte, Steiny, Guru, next. 95.7 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.